Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show This Week in WordPress and Tech. It's episode 914. We've got a great guest, we've got a great discussion. We're going to be discussing all things WordPress and YouTube. How to build a audience on YouTube in the WordPress and web design and training space. We've got somebody that's built a great audience themselves, Christian Taylor, with us. He's going to share his knowledge about how he did it, what have been some of the challenges, how he sees the world of WordPress. It should be all great stuff. So, Christian, would you like to quickly give the tribe a quick intro about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. So I always tell people I make videos on online tech, a lot of SaaS products. So I'm kind of in this in-between of half of my content is focused on WordPress, web platforms. The other half is maybe other SaaS tools, some privacy and security like VPNs, password managers, data removal services. So that's usually how I describe myself. I say I make content in online tech, and then people ask, what does that mean? And I tell them a bit more because I'm kind of all over the place, but I do make a good amount of content in the WordPress niche, and been using WordPress myself for probably at least the last 8 years. So yeah, that's a quick rundown on what I do.
That's great. And I've got my co-host, Kurt. Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Absolutely, Jonathan. Thank you. My name is Kurt. I own a company called Mañana No Más. I focus largely on membership and learning websites. I also work directly with WP Tonic and the great folks at Lifter LMS.
That's fantastic. And before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great show, I've got a couple messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, tribe. It's Jonathan here, and I want to tell you about OmenSend. OmenSend is a great plugin that delivers SMS messaging and email messaging to your clients. If you're building a woo solution for your client and you're looking to provide a SMS functionality for them and great email, why don't you look at OmenSend? Got a great special deal. You can go to wp-tonic.com/deals, and they're offering 30% off the first 3 months. Plus, if you need any technical help or a migration, they're offering almost $1,000 to help migrate if you've got a group of clients that are looking for this type of service. It's a great offer. They're a great company. I highly recommend them to you. So, like I say, go over to the deals page on the WP Tonic website and you'll find more details there. Speak to you soon, folks. Bye. Coming back, folks, I just want to point out we've got some great special offers from the sponsors, plus a great curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services. You can get all these goodies that will save you a ton of time as a WordPress professional by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals, and you find all the goodies there. What more could you ask for? I say, what more could you ask for? Probably a lot, but that's all you're going to get from that bloody page. It's a great page, though, folks. It will save you a bag of time. So, Christian, let's go straight into it. So, What's been a couple of the key insights on this windy journey connected to building your personal brand? And I would imagine with a big emphasis on YouTube, what's some of the things that you feel that you like to share with our beloved tribe?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think some of the most valuable insights I've learned would be consistency, probably number one. You know, it takes, if you're trying to build an audience, whether it's on YouTube or any other social platform, you've got to be consistent. You got to post, whether that's weekly, daily, there's no right or wrong answer necessarily as far as the interval, but whatever interval you choose, you have to pick some level of consistency. So there's creators out there that make these just spectacle videos that take a month to produce, so they only post one video a month. And then there's creators that post every day because they're able to kind of just sit in front of their computer, start screen recording, make a quick little video. So there's no necessarily defined interval of how often you have to post, but you do need to pick something to be consistent. And I'd say the other thing that's really helped me throughout my journey is actually getting to know my audience. That's something that I didn't do for many years, but I've done that in recent years through running polls on my social media, asking questions. It's interesting how much people love to give anonymous feedback. I always thought, oh, if I run these polls, people are going to think it's invasive or weird. They're not going to want to answer them. But because social media polls tend to be anonymous and the platforms don't tell you who said what, they just tell you the numbers and percentages, people love answering them. So getting to know your audience that way. I also launched a Discord server, and that's been wonderful to just chat with people and ask them, like, hey, what do you do? Why do you watch my content? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? And when you really learn who your audience is as you grow and start making content for them, and you're not just throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping it sticks, that's really kind of the key to starting to see some growth and success. But I mean, there's a lot of ways we could go, things we could drill down on. But those are probably like two takeaways that I've learned over the years.
So how long have you been really serious about your YouTube channel? How long have you been concentrating quite a bit of your time and energy on it?
I've been full-time on YouTube for the past 4 years, and I'd say it's been like a serious hobby for 8 years. So about 4 years of doing consistent weekly uploads, really desiring to build an audience, and then another 4 years since then of being full-time.
Right. So full-time. So how many videos per week do you produce then on average then?
I do one full-length video a week, and my goal has been to do one short a week that I would put on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. I've not succeeded in hitting that metric like I want to, but at least one full video a week.
Now, we've got to get real here. You know, you're in a very very competitive sector. It's a niche, but it's a reasonably broad niche. How do you think you've managed to get any traction in this area where many haven't?
Yeah, a lot of my content is heavily search-based. So I do a lot of comparison videos. That's kind of my bread and butter, and how I've built a lot of my following is I just put myself in the shoes of the consumer and think, what tools are they looking for? What are they using? And what are they thinking when they're considering, do I use this web host or this web host? So I think by being able to put myself in the shoes of the consumer with my testing and research, that keeps people watching once they click. And actually getting people to click, comparisons help a lot because you're able to cover many brands or tools in one video. So that way, if I do a comparison on web hosting and someone's maybe thinking of using Dreamhost, well, if I did a review video on Hostinger, then I'm narrowing my audience to just people that are interested in Hostinger. But if I do a comparison video on DreamHost, Hostinger, Bluehost, you know, all just different web hosts. I don't know why the guys are cracking up here, but
I'll forgive you, Christian. We all got to do what we got to do.
All good.
We all got to do what we got to do to make a living. You seem a very nice individual. Sorry, that's some of my English humor. You're smiling, so over to you, Kurt.
I just want to drop the hint that WP Tonic is a hosting company.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
We only specialize in a niche.
Yeah, I've not taken a look at WP Tonic yet, but I would absolutely love to, especially because I have an LMS site now, which is brand new. So, yeah, love to take a look, try it out.
Yeah, but I was going to throw, if you don't mind, Kurt, before I throw it over to you, just go on.
Yeah,
we've been kidding, but we've touched. How do you keep authentic and keep any? And how do you guard your credibility? Because obviously, you're there to make a living. We all are, and you get a lot of that living by affiliate income and placement. But how, in your own mind, where have you put the barriers? Where have you put the guardrails where you won't step over because you know that it's a greasy pole to losing any credibility? How have you worked this out yourself? Only a small question.
Yeah, there's a couple ways I've done that. One is I will never do a sponsored review. You would be surprised how many companies email me and say, hey, can we pay you to do a review? I'm like, no, you can't. Like, I might organically do a review, but I'm not going to take money from you to do a review. If I do a sponsored video, it could be a tutorial, it could be an overview, but I'm never going to make a firm recommendation in a sponsored video. I'm never going to say, this is the best web host that I've ever used. You have to sign up for it. By the way, they sponsored the video. It's going to be, these are the features of the web host, or this is how you set up the web hosting. But I'm not going to say, like, they're the best, you have to use them. If it's a comparison video where everything's organic, then I will make those kind of statements because that's my honest, genuine opinion. And one thing that I have committed to early on is that I'm never going to let the level of commission sway what I say in a comparison. Like, there was one year where I did a comparison video and the tool that I ended up recommending as the winner just so happened to be the highest paying as far as the affiliate program. So that was a really nice year, starting to see a lot of conversions from that affiliate program. But the next year I did it again, the tool fell behind and there was another one that was better and the commission was way lower. And I think anyone would be tempted to just keep recommending the tool that pays the best. But I said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. So just keeping it 100% honest, even if that means I go from recommending one tool that has a really high commission to another that has a lower one or even no commission. Sometimes I'll see comments on my channel that say, oh, you're only recommending this tool because you have an affiliate link and you're getting paid. And I always
what a terrible thing! What an act of treachery! You know how you can live with yourself?
Yeah,
that was English sarcasm.
Yeah, well, I chuckle too because half the time when people say that, it's a tool that doesn't have an affiliate program. I'm like, you do realize that
Can I tell you my approach to this is much more simple than yours because I'm not as sophisticated as you. So my approach, I actually got to think the product's half decent, but in a crowded, in most areas that are crowded, to find one that's really much more superior is not usual. And secondly, it depends in the context of the end user. So one product can't meet all end users. Number two, I've got to actually think like the people. If they're shitheads, I really don't want to do business with them. because if you mix with rats that got fleas, they normally will infest you. So arseholes I'd rather not do business with. And number three, not this is go daddy, anything goes, though, basically. Because I'm not dealing with the fucking elephant killers. Even I wouldn't do fucking business with those bastards. So there we go. Over to you, Kurt.
Oh, Jonathan, thank you. I'm just going to be like super organic here, Christian. I've got 800 plus videos on my YouTube channel and I've got 82 subscribers, right? So obviously I've got some work to do and some growth to do there. But what are the critical things that you came away from when you were building kind of your YouTube audience? Like, so you're like, I focused on this, I focused on that. But where were the real stumbling blocks where you were like, oh, crud, or I can't believe I didn't see that earlier, or like what clicked?
Yeah. Early on, I was definitely making content that I wanted to make rather than focusing on who is my audience, what do they want to see? So I would get frustrated because occasionally, let's say like one in every 10 videos happened to be a video that someone wanted to see in my audience, or I call them like my avatar. I think about like demographic, even down to things like income, interests, where they like part of the world that they're in. So in the beginning, I was making stuff that I cared about and not everyone cared about it. So when I really started to understand that you make content for your audience, not for yourself, I started seeing more consistent growth. I think the other thing, it's very basic, but just learning what there's demand for with search traffic. So there's a number of research tools out there. VidIQ is one that's free. TubeBuddy is another free one for YouTube specifically. And you can just...
Well, they've got paid versions, haven't they?
They do, yeah. But I've actually never paid for either.
Oh, right. I paid for the paid version in TubeBuddy.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're great tools.
And there you go. There you go, folks. That's where I win, Ron. Should have stayed with the free version, should I? There we go.
But like, you know, if you have a hunch that maybe this video idea is going to do well in search, you can search it on YouTube, look at the vidIQ score, and it'll say, like, based on the search volume and the competition out there, it's a 70 out of 100, which I would say you should make that video. Or it might say it's a 40 out of 100, meaning it's either low search volume or high saturation or some combination of both. So I think that's been it for me, just optimizing content for search and also really putting myself in the shoes of the audience before I make a video. And there's often videos that I really want to make, but I'm like, it's too niche. I just know that there's not enough people in my audience that are going to appreciate it. I could make it for myself and enjoy making it, but it's not going to get a lot of views.
Yeah. I was thinking in terms of just as an example, John Maxwell, famous leadership guru, book writer, author, the whole thing. He does a thing called Minute with Maxwell and then does a subject, right? So Minute with Maxwell and then whatever the word of the day is. And it gets tons of plays. And so then my company name's Mañana No Más. Then you think, oh, well, Mornings with Mañana, right? And you're like, okay, that'll work. But then I realized quickly that doesn't work. A, I'm not famous. I don't have 16 million people buying my books, right? And then I realized late in the game that Mornings with Mañana, no one knows what that is by looking at that title. And so recently I started playing with titles and a little bit more descriptive in the descriptions. And then I'm starting to realize, well, that's how people actually find the video, right? So I think there's a lot of the setup and a lot of the stuff that just normal people on YouTube don't even think about. They think they make the video and it should propagate based on the video's content. But there's all that other stuff that drives the eyes to the video, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on a really good point, which is packaging, the title and thumbnail. The packaging of a video is almost more important than the video itself. Not entirely, because it's possible you could nail the packaging, you get a bunch of clicks, and your retention rate is super low because the video sucks. But I'd say 9 times out of 10, it's always the other way around. You could spend a month making a masterpiece of a video. You're super proud of it. You put so many hours and money into it and just all this effort. And because your packaging is a miss, nobody watches it. So you're absolutely right. Packaging is important. And another thing that I thought about as you were talking is something I learned over the years is that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. When you find a piece of content that works, you can kind of just keep riding that train and make evolutions of that content, whether it's like a round two, some kind of series you could do. It could be both a topic itself. So like, hey, I saw success with VPN comparisons for a while, so I'm going to keep making VPN comparisons. Or it could also be a format. Like I started seeing success with the five things format, like five things to know before you use X or five things to know before buying Y. And in that case, it's not even really about the specific tool category. It's more a format that's working and I could apply that to WordPress tools, VPN, security, like any of the things I talk about, I can kind of morph that format to.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Jonathan, over to you.
How much, before we go for our break, how much do you spend on the analytical data? Because some of the gurus in this area, you know, have courses about how to become successful on YouTube. And I've had a couple of them on the show, some of the biggest names, a couple of them. And they've all got courses and they seem to look at a certain group of metrics and they're looking at those analytics. Or that I don't, that's probably why I'm a failure, you know. But how much do you spend on the analyticals, or do you do it kind of middle way? You watch, look at a bit of it, but you don't obsess by it.
I would say I look at it a little bit, but I try not to obsess. I won't say don't obsess. I'm watching a video very closely initially after I release it. So probably the first 2 days, I am closely monitoring the click-through rate, the retention, because that just kind of helps me know if I should try different packaging. So I'll usually have maybe 2 to 3 thumbnail options that I make before the video launches. And I start with one, I watch the click-through rate. If I feel like it's too low, I swap it out, see what that change did. But once a video is more than 2 days old, I kind of forget about it and, you know, maybe come back to it 1 month, 3 months, 6 months.
Because you've got to give it a bit of time to see how the...
Yeah, especially search-based content is evergreen. It often can have a really slow start, but you come back to it 6 months later and it's got a lot more views. So on a per video level, I watch it closely for probably the first 2 days. And then my channel as a whole, I probably look at my channel analytics once a week and really drill down into it once a month, because I plan my videos in batches of 4, basically like a month's worth of content at one time. So every month when I sit down and plan that next month of content, then I really do a deep dive on what's working on the channel right now, what's not working, what are some content gaps or opportunities for expanding on what's working. But honestly, I try not to look at my analytics too much or obsess about it, because I have done that in the past and it's no fun looking at the day-to-day views because they fluctuate. So yeah. Sometimes you have a video that starts to take off and your overall channel views go up and then the video kind of chills out and it turns the other way and it's going down. And, you know, if you're watching it every day, you're just stressing yourself out with, oh, today it's lower than yesterday. And oh no, I thought it bottomed out, but it went even lower. So yeah, it's a slippery slope to go down.
So this is only my observation and I'd be interested to see if you think there's anything to it. I've noticed a lot of the hosting providers in the WordPress space that are trying to up their game on video. Every hosting provider, the major ones, and a lot of it's a total snooze fest. It's bloody awful shit that they're bunning out. But you must have noticed that. The only people is like Elegant Themes, they're animals, you know, but they're on all their online marketing, they're animals, aren't they? They seem to be doing a reasonable job, but most of it's turd, isn't it? Why do you think they're so fucking bad at it? Got any insights?
That's an interesting question. I think it's a number of things. One, it takes a lot of time to master how to make good content. I think a lot of web hosts see it as they often have a great blogging strategy, and that's what they've done for years. They have a blog, they make helpful articles, they know how to do SEO on Google. So they sort of approach it from the mindset of, if we take a blog post and record it as a video and throw it out there, it's going to do well. That's really not true. There's so much more to video. There's a term in YouTube called retention editing, which is like, if anyone's ever watched a Mr. Beast video, just the super flashy, fast moving, attention grabbing style. You don't have to do that to that extreme with resource content or education content, but you still have to be entertaining and engaging and have cuts going and not just like sit in front of the camera and read a blog post as a script.
We are talking to the camera. Our corporate speech, we will dominate. You will watch this video.
Yeah. And the second thing I'll say on that is I know for sure, because I've seen this a lot with companies that want to sponsor content on my channel, is they don't...
They actually supply scripts. I've had a couple
sometimes
maggots actually try and provide a script for me. Can you imagine the response they've got for me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's, some of these companies don't understand that you can't make content that you want to make. And I said this earlier already, but it's proving the point, is that they don't want to see that they have to make content for their audience or their customer base. They're more interested in pushing and promoting their own initiatives. And it's like, oh, okay, great. Make those videos, do that. But if you wonder why it's not performing, that's why. It's because people...
You know the other thing? I'm on a roll now. So, you know the other thing that fucks me up is that these fuckers will easily cough up $100,000 for a WordCamp, right? And they'll come to you and they'll fucking say... They start asking questions over a couple of thousand and you just want to say to them, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself. You know, they got the audacity to start questioning you about, you know, whether you know regularly they cough up 100,000 plus. And you just want to tell them to go and fuck themselves, don't you?
It's interesting when sometimes companies are very fixated on conversions with sponsorships and they'll say things like, oh, we don't spend money on brand awareness, or, oh, you know, we can't justify an ROI without X amount of conversions. And they treat it purely as a math problem on lifetime value of the customer, the cost of the campaign, and, okay, we need to get X amount of...
I wouldn't even mind that, but how can they... Are you saying that they, if they get a certain size booth in a certain position, they really see a difference and that's why they cough up the 100,000? Is it that linked, the position of the booth, the size of its placement in a specific WordCamp?
No, I think conference booths are purely about brand awareness.
That's what annoys me, because I could understand it if they could show that, because business is business, but I don't even believe it's that. That's why I started ranting about it, because I don't even think it is driven by that. Do you think there's anything to what I say, or am I... I've got to the age where I'm just losing the plot, really.
So are you saying you you don't think brand awareness is an aspect of conference booths?
No, well, totally. But what I'm saying is when they do come to you and they say they treat it like for paid for click or it's just a pure mathematical thing, I say there's an element to it, but you've got to be more sophisticated than that. But the only area that I know that does that is paid for click, either on Facebook to some extent or on Google. And you when you're dealing with YouTube or podcasting or a number of different avenues, it's a more jumbled up platform. So they're trying to impose something that has no real linkage to the platform, to the influencer that's on a particular platform. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's a point of frustration.
Well, thank God for that, because I figured I was losing it.
Yeah, no. That's a point of frustration that I've had with potential sponsors. And I think the best thing to do in that case is find a new sponsor. Because if a company is so fixated on clicks and conversions and that's all they care about, they're kind of skipping past the fact that they're hiring a one-man show or at least a small team who can brainstorm, ideate, film the content, edit the content. Oftentimes, there's the ability for them to license it if they want. So you're not just putting an ad on a website. You're hiring someone to come up with the ad, produce the ad, publish the ad to their platform, and the brand could, if they want, license that ad from you and run it on other platforms as well. But so many brands just skip past that and say, yeah, but how many clicks are we going to get? Or how many views? It's like, well, that's a part of it, but that's not the whole story.
Yeah. We're going to go for our break, folks. We will be back in a few moments. It's been a great discussion. I'm losing the plot. I need to drink some more coffee. I'll be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
Poor old Christine, he's just been sitting there wondering, what the hell have I got on? You know, his eyes are getting wider. My co-host just wants to get away quick. I don't know. I can't blame him. Back over. But before we go into the second half of the show, I just wanted to say we got a great newsletter. A great newsletter, which I write every week with the latest WordPress and tech stories, with a little bit of my sarcasm thrown in. What more could you ask for, Tribe? And it's free. Free! What, like I say, what value? And you can get this goodie by going over to wp-tonic.com/newsletter. wp-tonic.com/newsletter. Can you imagine what it's like, folks? That's why you want to sign up. So over to you, Kurt.
Well, I want to make ground pets happy, and I want to change the direction of the conversation and get on to word.
Yeah, he's grumpy, isn't he?
He is grumpy.
He's a grumpy old dude, isn't he? There we go.
So first off, first time I saw Christian, I thought I had lost Will Middleton at WordCamp US, and Christian's walking around, and I'm like, dang it, there's Will. And I chase him down, and I'm like, you're not Will. So that's the first time I met Christian. Beyond that, beyond meeting you at WordCamp and obviously, you know, talking to the guys at Lifter LMS and stuff, you use WordPress, right? So what is it about WordPress that kind of draws you to the product and to the community?
There's a couple of things about WordPress. Early on,
the affiliates.
Yeah, so many different ways that I can upsell people. No. Early on, it was I think mostly a cost thing. Like when I was, I'm going to show my age or lack thereof here, but when I was a kid, I would play around with Wix and Weebly, Squarespace, you know, all these different platforms. And I was really getting interested in web development, but I didn't want to pay like $15 a month or whatever the price was at the time just to remove the obnoxious made on Wix.com banner and connect a custom domain and all that. So I discovered WordPress and I was like, oh, this is so affordable, so powerful. All I need is a $2 a month web hosting account. And, you know, we've seen inflation since then. So now it's probably more like $8 a month at least. But, you know, poor Jonathan. To be clear here, I'm talking about like your super simple shared hosting account for like a personal project.
Wait, what's those alligator people? They're even worse. What are they
called? Oh, HostGator?
Oh, HostGator.
Yeah.
Oh, they're supposed to be sponsors, are they? Are you listening?
What, of my channel?
Yeah.
Oh, No.
You would even go that far, would you?
Let's just say I'm not a fan of their parent company, who also owns many other...
But they own everybody, don't they? They're worse than the chocolate factory, yeah. That's possible. There we go, sorry.
Yeah, no, all good. But so it started for affordability. And then when I started to see how powerful it was, I really started to appreciate the platform. Now I would say I've stuck with WordPress because I'm more and more aware of a platform's ability to control you. I hate to say cancel you, but, you know, and I'm not necessarily worried that would be a problem for me and what I'm doing, but I just don't like that we're seeing more and more platforms, like social platforms, say, hey, we're going to suspend your account for whatever reason. And with WordPress, there's much more of that control where the worst thing that could happen is a web host cancels you and says, we're dropping you as a customer. Then I take my site, go over to WP Tonic and say, hey, Jonathan's been spicy enough on this episode, so I doubt he's going to cancel me for whatever my site says.
You've got to be a real nut. You've got to be a real fucking nut for me to cancel. Me and my crew are more patient than most, but we have had to say goodbye to some real lunatics, but what can you do?
But hey, you know, those people, if they really wanted, they could get their own server infrastructure and keep running their WordPress site. So it's not like with Shopify.
Well, the thing is, they were lunatics, but they had big communities and they were making a ton of money, but they didn't want to pay anything for decent hosting. So they had to go, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I just like having that full control over where
I think you're making it. I'll give you an example. A couple of days ago, I used a UL shortener called Bitly.
Uh-huh.
I've been using it for donkey's years. I just utilize the free account because it's quite generous and I don't get anywhere near it. And they sent me an email and it was in the normal PR speak of 1984 that we have to put up with. We are increasing the quality of your account, Jonathan. We believe in our users. So what we're going to do is fucking shaft you. So basically, instead of giving you 100 free UL shortenings per month, we're reducing it to 10 and we want $99 a year. So I'm off to the next free plan. And I thought to myself, are you that desperate to get money out of your users that you won't even grandfather them in or anything? Is the VC world got so freaking tight that you got to go around doing that? But obviously so many people do cough it up. I don't know, but it's just a perfect example, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, you never know. I think with LMS platforms, I considered Kajabi, I considered Teachable, and I'm like, you know, I don't want these platforms to be able to just raise the price one day and say, hey, we're doubling the price or whatever the price increase is, either pay up or get out. You know, I just don't want to have to deal with that. And that could happen with WordPress to some degree.
Definitely if you're hosting with us. I do, when you're making a ton of money and you want top service, I do expect you to give me a little bit of the gravy.
Yeah, well, absolutely, yes. And like your costs can and will go up with WordPress, but you still have so much more control. If one host wants to 4X your price and you feel that's unfair, take your business elsewhere.
Back over to you, Kurt.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that all said, if you think about your experience in WordPress and the years with WordPress, what do you see as being the general challenge 2024? Like, it's so, and I, because you got your finger on the pulse and you get these surveys from people and you know what people are asking. So from your perspective, what do you think people are facing as the challenge or the issue with WordPress now?
Number one challenge and issue is perhaps a challenge that I don't know if it can ever be solved because of the whole concept of WordPress being open source, but it's people are way too confused by all the fragmentation in page builders and themes. I can't tell you how many comments I get from people saying, oh, I bought Divi and I bought Elementor and like, yeah, exactly. Like,
I keep doing this to me. I can't tolerate any more blood supply.
And ever since I've never
had such a conversation that's got my blood supply going up for a long time, and I'm an old geezer. I'm going to die on this bloody show. You keep doing that. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you guys got it right away, but you'd be surprised at how many people don't understand what the different products do, how they work together. So, because I've made content before explaining the difference between a WordPress theme and a page builder. Many themes include page builders, but they're not necessarily a page builder. Many page builders have an official theme, but you could also use it with a different theme. So I've had a comment say like, well, I bought Divi because you said that Divi was a theme and element.
I feel sorry. The Divi people are such lovely people. I always I never know what to say really, because they're some of the nicest people I've met at WordCamps. But I never know what to say about it, you know. But I do think you're really spot on. But I suppose there's fragmentation and there's fragmentation, isn't there? And I just think it's gone on steroids. So I think when I had the great leader on the show telling us that Gutenberg was a frigging 10-year plan, he kind of produced that out of his fucking backside, didn't he? 10-year plan, give me a break. The way the world's going, we'll be bloody dead and buried before they get that fucking thing finished. I don't think that's helped, has it?
I think it's helped a little bit in that we're seeing more and more companies make blocks for Gutenberg, and it does feel a little bit unified more than it did, because it's like, okay, you could have three different blocks packs that you use with Gutenberg and they all work on the same page. They all work on the same website, rather than, oh, well, I bought some templates for Elementor and I also bought some for Divi, but I can't use them together. So I think they're making slow progress.
Oh, you can. We got clients that got different four page builders and then they complained to us that their hosting isn't working very well.
I mean, I suppose technically you could, but I would highly advise against that. I'm sure you would too.
Let's go somewhere nice, because we're big pushers of it, and you've got your new course coming out. It is out, and it's a great course. And you've gone all in with Cadence, and so have we. So what's some of the main things you love about Cadence, and why did you decide that you're going to do a course about it? Apart from the affiliate money.
Actually, so the course itself, I show people exclusively the free version. And that's kind of my sell, is I picked Cadence for that course because you don't have to pay for it. You can upgrade. I'm sure many people do and will. But in that course, if there was a feature that you had to upgrade Cadence for, I found a plugin that could do it for free just to say, you can upgrade if you want and it's going to be more convenient. But let me show you how to still accomplish this for free just to get that knowledge out there for people who are starting out, don't have a big budget to build their website. So that was attractive for me, the amount of stuff you can do for free. The second thing is probably the emphasis on the blocks editor, eventually full site editing, but the fact that they still give you the power to decide whether you want to use Gutenberg or Elementor. I'm really attracted to that because I can still invest in teaching people how to set up the header and the footer and the styling and kind of the basics of the theme. But then from there, that person could decide they want to use Gutenberg, which is a bit simpler, more straightforward, or they have advanced needs. They want to use Elementor. It's still going to work with the theme. And for me, a huge sell for my own site was the deep integration with Lifter LMS, because there's not many themes out there that have that level of control. So yeah, big win for Lifter LMS, but I was really attracted to it for that as well.
And I do like Ben and his team at Cadence. Now, I've known Ben for a few years. He's a great developer and he's got a great insight, and he seems to know where he's taking Cadence and where he wants it to be. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I've seen them evolve over the years and have a lot of respect for how they've stayed as one of the top themes that people choose. And I've seen some of these other mega themes. I mean, I won't name anyone in particular.
Oh, please do. That's what, you know.
Well, I just in general, I've seen mega themes that they seem like they're doing really well. And then 3 years later, they're still doing well because of the name. But if you actually evaluate the theme and what it can do, it's gotten really stale. So I don't think that's true with Cadence. They seem pretty dedicated to making updates, like with Cadence AI. That still's got some work to do. It's rough right now, but I like that they're thinking in that direction, innovating, adding stuff. So yeah, I think they know where they're going.
What about full site editing? What was your thoughts about that? Because I could see all the benefits, but it was initially, and some of the people that are part of the core of Gutenberg are some really quality people. And I would never personally go and criticize them because I know these people and they're much brighter and better people than me. I'm just a poor sinner with a potty mouth, which I've showed in this episode. I don't know. I've had too much coffee and something's pumped me up. I don't know. But you kept mentioning, I was just getting more not bothered that you was saying about this host and that host and... I'll just get more hot and bothered as the show was going. You've already got my blood supply going. What's your thoughts about full site editing? I could understand it. I think it's going, but on the other hand, I thought, why have you gone down this path? Why did you go down here? What was your feelings about it?
I like it. I'm optimistic about it long term. But I'm really worried that the next 5 to 10 years, maybe 5 years, is going to be a disaster as far as confusing people, even more than they're already confused with WordPress. Because I think we all know with WordPress, whenever they add a new UI or a new way to do something, they leave the old way for perhaps way too long. And it's a fine line. I get that there's people that have old methods of doing it, like the classic editor. I'm fine with the classic editor still being there as a plugin you can install, but it's kind of that same idea of, well, okay, if we add full site editing and add this new way, we're still going to have the customized screen and these you know, like there's, why are there two ways to edit the menu? I still don't understand that. You can do it in the customize screen or there's the menu screen. And for widgets, you can do that in the customize screen or there's the widget screen. And I think full site editing is just going to make that problem 10 times worse over the next 5 years, where it's like, you can do this in the full site UI, or you can still edit it over here in this other UI. And maybe they're stepping on each other if you try to make changes in both areas. But once they can get through that, they can fully deprecate the old way of doing it. I think it's ultimately going to open a lot of options for people, especially I would love to see WordPress get to a place where a theme is what people think a theme is, which is just a combination of colors, fonts, styles, layouts, and not this bundle of like page builder, contact form, slider, janky third-party settings.
You've got to be a multi-millionaire on theme for this, haven't you? Oh, so what was your sold off now, aren't they? The parent company that sold off to, what's the photo people? Shuttle, they sold off, didn't they? They're gone.
Envato?
Yeah, they sold up. Did you not know that?
Did they?
No, well, you obviously got away from that. Well, good luck to you. Wish I could do that.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah,
it's a recent announcement too, huh?
Well, in the world of WordPress, it's like 4 years ago because things move so quick and I've given up trying to keep up with it. And it's obvious you have. Wish I could play.
Yeah, I totally missed that. That was like 2 weeks ago.
So you just flick, those 2 weeks just fly by, don't they? on to the next drama. Back over to you, Kurt.
Well,
been a total fucking mess of a podcast, and it's all been down to me, hasn't it? I don't know. I apologize, Kristen. You have to come back, but you just laugh at me, don't you, Kristen?
It's got to come back.
You just laugh at it. It's just been a train wreck. I apologize to my co-host as well.
It's all good. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Right.
Well, final question. This is our fun question. If you had your own time machine, yeah, Doctor Who, H.G. Wells, whatever. You have your own time machine. You travel back to the beginning of your career. Think about when you first really started putting oomph into it. What essential piece of advice would you give yourself?
Don't come on this podcast?
definitely wouldn't say that. I think I said this again earlier, so I'm sorry if anyone's disappointed by this answer seeming unoriginal.
I've made a career of disappointing people. So don't be shy.
I think I would tell myself, make content for your target audience. That would sum up years and years of frustration and spinning in circles and why isn't it working? What am I doing wrong? I think if I could time travel back and tell myself that, I would have grown so much quicker.
Yeah. That's fantastic advice. I totally agree with you, Christine. Right.
We made it.
Yeah, what's the best way for...
It ain't over yet, Chris.
I'm going to get off this show. What's the best way for people to find out more about you, what you're up to?
You can find everything at CraylorMade.com. I'll spell that. It's CraylorMade made.com. Always spell it because I say Crayler and I see people's eyes glaze over. They're like, what? But yeah, best way to do it, CraylorMade.com. If you Google CraylorMade, you'll probably see Crayola because it's some big company that thinks they're better than me. So yeah, CraylorMade.com. You'll find my channel, links to the course, links to my social media. Everything's there.
My very patient and understanding co-host, Kurt, what's the best way for people to find out more about you?
For starters, I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn, and I'm very active on LinkedIn. So connect with me there, and we'll connect and message each other. The other way is Mañana No Más. Anything that's Mañana No Más online typically leads directly to me.
And if you found this interview interesting and entertaining, please share it on your social media. It's a great way of promoting the show, and we get more people that join the tribe. We will be back next week with another great interview or a roundtable show. We'll be back soon, folks. See you soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.